My safe word is Quetzal. Let's go.
I feel like a fluttery butterfly person.
Oh, is that how dicks work?
Try to be a little less horny.
It's absolutely a cruising spot.
The boat is happening.
What if the dragon is trans? Whose baby is that?
I'm Slavic. Okay. I can't.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just... Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
Welcome back. I'm Netta. Hi.
This episode is part two of our coverage of the Four Continents Championships.
Yeah, we're talking about the free skates, which were riveting because a lot of movement happened in both men and women. Like I said last time, basically anything that happened in the short stopped having any importance like halfway through a freeze. And I always like an event like that because it's exciting. It like keeps you on your toes. I like when the last skater skates out and I'm like, I still don't know if you're going to podium or end up like sixth. Okay, so this time we're turning things around a little bit because of equality, and we're gonna start with men, which is something no one has ever done before.
Yeah, in the name of,
in the name of gender equality, we're putting men first. Okay, so we are doing the top six overall, not the top six from the free, because that's how the medals are actually assigned, and we're here to talk about people who win things.
We don't talk about losers on this podcast.
Until we do. Speaking of losers, in sixth place we have Junghwan Cha from Korea, who plays ultimate loser Romeo from Romeo and Juliet in this program.
Romeo is a loser.
Romeo is such a loser. He is so dumb. I'm over people who are like trying to be like fake edgy about Romeo and Juliet and being like, oh yeah, it's just like dumb teenagers. I'm like, that's the whole fucking point. But yeah, he is skating to Romeo and Juliet, and this is the first time we get to talk about this program.
Yeah, this program has become iconic this season in a very short period of time for one particular moment. So this program incorporates a lot of dialogue from the movie, a lot of spoken word, and there's one moment when they include Leonardo DiCaprio screaming, Juliet!
And it's, it's
he
wonderful.
Fully acts it. Yeah. He commits to the moment.
I want to talk about that moment when we get there. But before that, and you kind of opened it up already, I wanted to say that this program makes me believe in a future where we can have more spoken word on ice. Because it literally opens with like the prologue to Romeo and Juliet, like the full two households, both alike in dignity, etc. And it works. Like, it really lays the scene for us, if you will.
It does, and it makes me feel like one day we could see a program skated to just the audio of Javier Fernandez at the press conference at Euros.
I have seen Lord mistakes in figure skating that I have never seen before.
Just Yuzu comes out and does that for his expo.
I just want to skate to like George Watsky.
I want to skate to my own podcast.
Just be like, you land a Quetzal as I'm saying my safe word is Quetzal, let's go.
No, that's too on the nose. But speaking of smart programs, I think this might be one of my favorite pieces of choreography.
Oh, yeah,
this
totally.
Season. Shailen Bourne knocks it out of the gosh darn park.
Yeah, it's incredible choreo, and it is so dynamic. And that's so smart for a free skate, because that's 4.5 minutes. Even if someone's like technically skating well, it can get very boring if it's just like a mellow classical piano. This tells me a whole ass story.
Yeah, and you know what? I never want to hear another theater company say that they can't make any cuts to Romeo and Juliet, because Junghwan Cha told the entire fucking like 3.5 hour play in 4 minutes.
Yep.
He got it all in there. I got the full narrative. It's, and Shailen Bourne, of course, too. Like, that's brilliant. You know, sometimes we're a little critical of trying to tell the whole story in one program, but this does it. This is like everything in the kitchen sink. We open with the epic proclamation of like two households, etc.
Yep.
And then we go into like club kid twink feeling his fantasy maybe is on drugs dance sequence.
It's fully he's on acid. Like, if you watch the movie, that's the implication. And Junghwan is very good at like translating that into a beautiful step sequence.
It's a lot of like feeling his own torso while doing like bracket turns.
Yeah. It's very sad though this time. I mean, he skates mostly great, but he is late for Juliet, and it makes me so sad.
I know. You know what, though? The fact that Shaylin put the choreo sequence in, like, over the really, like, sweet, tender balcony scene music is so smart because, like, first of all, that piece of music makes me cry every time because it's just, like, it just sounds exactly like it, the way it feels to be in love when you're a teenager.
Aww.
And it does. And
it does. Oh, God.
The choreo sequence is where we get all of those moves that we love, like the spirals and the Ina Bowers and the spread eagles. And it's basically where they get to show off their fancy edge work. And the fact that she put all those moves over that sequence, it makes so much sense because those are like the romantic moves.
And it's where you want to like quiet down and really watch.
Yeah, like, and they're like flirty and like he's wooing her with his Ina Bauer. Like that I would be wooed by that.
Yeah.
And his Ina Bauer is when Leo says, "Did my heart love till now?" And I'm like, that's what I am thinking in that moment.
It is such smart choreography. It's so great. But it reminds me of Maxim Kovtun's Carmen in that it's so like explicitly choreographed to every single beat of music and every single spoken word that like when he misses a tiny tiny bit you can really see him like catching up to it, but he finishes right on time, which means that he did like all of that math in his head at some point. You know what, we'll see Juliet some other time, it's fine.
Yeah, I did get my other, like, my second favorite moment in the program, which is when he, like, sadly takes the poison. Like, he just has a very sad face, and you can see, like, he does this hand motion that's, like, shoving poison in your mouth and then, like, goes down his into his body. It's, like, it's great. Drama. It's high drama.
It's so great. I want this to be on Spark Notes along with, like, the movie. This is, like, a very good 4.5 minute, you know, my 9th grade final exam is in 30 minutes and I need to watch something material.
Yeah, it's true. I also like when a program literally ends in death.
Also, I'm not sure about this, but it sounds like as he's getting off the ice, what all Brian Mercer has to say for himself is, "Good boy." And I'm like, you know what?
That's correct. he says, "Good fight."
Good fight? Okay, that's fair.
But then Tracy Wilson is there when he gets off the ice and she goes, "Oh boy, eh?"
One day when we have a Patreon, we're going to have a compilation of just Tracy making me happy.
And she also says to him in the kiss and cry, she's like, "You sold it well and you played with the audience. You played with the music. That's what makes it special, eh?"
Yeah, that's all you can ask for from a Romeo and Juliet is you play with the audience and you make it special.
He did make it special.
He made it so special. So he gets 158.50 points for the free skate, which brings him to 255.83 overall. He's in like 8th place for the free skate, but he ends up in 6th overall, which is great because we get to talk about him.
Yeah, he didn't get as many points as maybe one might think just watching it with the naked eye, because he did step out of a couple jumps, but overall it looked pretty clean. But as Brian Orser pointed out, it's all those under rotations. He had a lot of under rotated jumps and lost, you know, those add up, those lost points.
Yeah. So that's like something that is, I'm not going to say easy to fix, but it's one of those things that like, as soon as he gets off the ice, his coaching team knows what he has to be working on. So that's a good place to be at, I feel like. And speaking of this coaching team, we're going to carry right on with some more cricket club action. In 5th place, we have Jason Brown. Is so special.
A darker, edgier, scruffy Jason Brown.
See, he is darker and edgier overall, but for this particular program, my notes say softer now, bowling league. Because, like, compared to Love is a Beach, this is softer now. He is trying to get over whoever hurt him in his short program, and he's out with his friends, with his old friends, and he's going bowling.
And yeah, he's bowling with his old friends. That's literally exactly what it is. But they, like, maybe they have too many drinks while they're bowling. And then at the very end for Hazy Shade of Winter, they, like, go out in the town and kind of, like, tear
he's
shit
like, up. He's like, yeah, fuck it. I'm just going to go out and I'm not going to think about them. That's the narrative. But yeah, the top of this program is so soothing. Like, I feel comforted just watching him skate that. Because the music is, like, you know, a rainy fall afternoon. And it's just so nice.
I actually, I love Simon and Garfunkel, but I hate the song Old Friends for two reasons. One, it makes me feel like I'm trapped in a sepia photograph with no air.
Oh my God,
like it
so
just
correct.
Gives me anxiety.
That is such a synesthetic reaction to have to this.
It is. And then, like it reminds me of, like, being with old people. The other thing it reminds me of is the old friend's dog sanctuary, which is sad.
No, no, I can't deal with that. Yeah,
there are some people who love the old friend's dog sanctuary page. Oh my God, why would you torture yourself like that? I mean, I'm not a dog person, so like maybe that's why. But
I mean, I'm not a dog person either, but like it makes me so sad. But what doesn't make me sad is this program. I have an old...
Yeah, I think it's not about the old friend's dog sanctuary.
It could be, though. Like, I don't know his life. Maybe he's just skating.
Oh, yeah, it makes sense, because it looks like he's reaching down to pet things repeatedly during the program, so that would track.
I have a note which just says, almost. It's for the quad. We've been waiting for Jason to land his quad, and it's almost there. Like, he's, like, staying upright. It's just...
Yeah, he doesn't... fall. I mean, I think I'd have to look at the protocols. It does not, to me, look fully rotated.
I'm looking it up right now. Yeah, it is under rotated, and he kind of two foots
in
ish,
which is appropriate because Love Is a Bitch is by 2 feet. There you go, on brand always.
Yeah, very correct. It's not the worst squat sal attempt I've seen, and it gives me hope.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm a little torn about the quad sal from Jason because on the one hand, of course, I want Jason to have a quad. I want him to be competitive in the long run. And as the saying goes, once Jason Brown gets a quad, it's over for you hoes. But on the other hand, I'm like, are we pressuring Jason into being someone he's not?
I mean,
and in so doing, are we losing some of the magic of Jason Brown?
I mean, I feel like that's a greater conversation, though, because half of the Japanese ladies and every single Russian junior are now rushing to have quads, and like more and more women are attempting the triple axel, and all of that is very exciting. But at the same time, I do wonder, you know, how much time and effort they're spending on that rather than, you know, everything else they can be doing. So I feel like that's like a part of the greater conversation of doing riskier moves versus focusing on artistry or like focusing on perfecting all of the jumps you do have and consistency and all of that. So I don't know, I wonder. But I will say the second we see that quad clean, I will be celebrating, and then I'll go back to like nuanced conversation.
I think there's also something to be said for like just continuing to want to improve and learn more skills just for the sake of
continuing to grow. I feel like as long as you feel like your body is capable of taking whatever, you know, training is thrown your way, you should be trying things. And also, like, I have full faith in the cricket club that they would not be...
Oh, no, totally. I guess, like, my original concern bringing it up was just that it does seem like he's a little nervous going into it. And, like, a nervous Jason is not, like, an easy, relaxed, fun, playful Jason that we know and love. Yeah.
I feel like that's also because at Four Continents, I feel like a lot of the attention was, like, on that in particular. So it might have been just, like, in the back of his head as well. It's like, oh, people are watching for this right now.
He does, aside from the quad cell, have so many wonderful things to offer, though. Like, this choreo sequence is another one that is really inspired.
In a choreography, I love when it feels like the only place your body can possibly go next is towards the next step. And it just speaks to so much skill to be able to just tell a story or show the progression of a movement piece without having it feel like you're just ticking off the check marks, which are very much check marks that exist. Like, the judging piano is looking for them, but that doesn't mean that we have to be looking for them. He has this very graceful moment on his triple loop. He touches down, but he touches down so beautifully. Like, it's just like with a little flick of his wrist, and it just looks like choreo. And I'm like, this is so wonderful. It's just so fun to me that he's like, and I'm gonna touch down, but it's gonna look beautiful.
Just reaching down to pet an old dog.
Old friends.
He just passed an old blind dog on the street. He just wanted to give him a little pat. He's gonna keep going.
God, Jesus Christ. The combo spin, you know what I mean? It's the combo spin.
As the music changes.
As the music changes and he's still like combo spinning and he speeds up as we go into Hazy Shade of Winter, it gets me going. Every single time. It's another one of those things where it's like, the choreo could be like, and here's the end of my spin, and here's the new part of this music. And it's not like that. And it makes it feel so much more seamless, and it's great.
Yeah, and because free skates are so frequently compilations of different pieces of music, it's always really fun when the choreo really highlights that transition instead of just trying to hide it, because it's like, you can't hide it. You may as well lean into it and do something fun with it. I like his fun, cheeky facial expressions during that last step sequence. And yeah. he's like, down by the riverside. And we're like, oh, Jason, that's naughty.
Oh, Jason. I'll go down by the riverside. Stop, Jason.
Stop that.
That's me like 24/7. But Jason has his kiss and cry moment with Tracy. And he's always like such a joy in the kiss and cry. He's always like rambling. He's not paying attention to any feedback. He's just happy to be there. And then he gets his season's best for this free skate, which is so exciting. He gets 172.32 points. How great is that? Fourth in the free and fifth overall, which is great. He ends up with 258.89 points overall. And fifth, which is not bad. And again, he does that without a quad. So here's that for all of y'all. Think about that.
Yeah, just think about it. Just put it in your pipe and smoke on it.
In fourth place, we have the floppiest Canadian ever, Mr. Keegan Messing. So he does his free skate to like a Charlie Chaplin medley thing. And he skates that looking like original theater production of Les Mis, and he's playing Marius.
It's so cute.
It's so precious. Like, he has like a little ribbon instead of a tie.
It's adorable. And he starts it and like he's asleep. And every time I have to take notes on this program, I'm like, wake up, Keegan, it's time to skate.
And then he does. He does.
He's such a good Charlie Chaplin flopster.
I think one of my favorite things about this choreo is he has all of those moments in his footwork where he's like rushing to catch up to the music, and the music's like very quick and like fast paced and fun, and he has like all those tiny slidey steps, and they're so fun.
Oh yeah, and it's like he manages to do that Charlie Chaplin kind of clumsiness, but it's controlled clumsiness, which is so difficult.
I know I spoke last time about how much he is a liability when he's jumping, but when he's not jumping and it's just about like footwork and skating, he is so good at like unstable clumsiness, but he's actually like fully in control of his own body for once. Then he jumps and it's, you know, questionable, but I don't know, I feel like he likes both of those programs, but I feel like he always has like so much fun with this one, because it does have like all those like full like theater moments of like, you know, shrugging and like fully like connecting with the audience and like playing with them, like all those fun things that like Tracy would look for.
There's also like this whole extended sequence where he has like an imaginary cane, and he does everything with it that you could possibly do with a cane.
Yeah, this program has another one of those moments like Jason's combo spin into Hazy Shade of Winter, where he is spinning and it's as the music changes as well. And it makes me so happy because he like speeds up. And, like, the music's, like, picking up, and his spins are so wonderful. He's, like, such a centered spinner.
It's also, his choreo sequence is really, really great, because as much as we obviously love the moves, like, spirals and spread eagles and Nina Bowers, we always harp on those because they're beautiful, but they're also, like, the kind of standard go-to moves to show your skating skills in a choreo sequence. And his choreo sequence kind of doesn't have any of that. It's, like, all something different that really serves the character of the piece. It's all, like, slipping around and, like, slipping and sliding.
Yeah, it's very fast-paced. It's a lot of, like, edge work, and it's so fun. I think, like, that's why I respond to it, because it's, like, the pace of this entire choreo is so different from, like, everything else we're seeing.
It's almost like, I mean, this is very Charlie Chaplin, right? But it's almost, like, borderline mimey.
Yeah.
And it makes me laugh because when I think about, like, the standard motions that people do on ice, like, we talked about hair ruffling last week. There's also, like, clapping and slapping. There's, like, air instruments, right? And, like, Keegan does ones that are, like, sometimes I don't even know what he's doing. Like, okay, I feel like I'm playing charades and I'm losing, but I'm still having a good time. And there's one moment in particular when he, like, finds something on the ground and then puts it in his pocket. And I'm like, like, who on earth has ever done that on ice before? That's so random.
It's so great.
The second he gets off the ice, his coach, who looks like Riff Raff from Rocky Horror, goes, well, you did it, boy!
And he sure did.
Like, he sounds like Foghorn Leghorn.
He really, really did it. He did it so well that he gets his season's best for this. We're getting so many season's best in this free skate. It's so genuinely exciting.
He gets almost everyone.
Almost everyone. It's like 4 out of 6 people get their season's best. But he gets 179.43 points for the free skate, which actually places him 3rd in the free. So he, you know, he has that for him, and it places him 4th overall with 267.61 points. In 3rd place, we have Vincent Zhou.
Representing some problematic viewpoints, Vincent Zhou.
Vincent. I said this during nationals, I'll say it again, I'll probably say it many, many times as it comes up. I always enjoy a program that's like a nod to someone's heritage, like regardless of what their heritage is. I enjoy seeing like a little bit of tradition on ice.
I agree with that. And I won't go too much into it, but I think it's a good, because I did last time at nationals, but it's a good fit for what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah.
I think this costume for me, I loved it at first because I thought that the design on it was abstract. And then I noticed it's like a bad tattoo parlor flash art dragon, and that's where it lost me. And I generally don't love airbrushing ever on clothes in any circumstance. So that, I don't know, for me it was a miss.
But someone on Twitter, and I can't remember who, so I can't give credit, and I'm so sorry, but someone on Twitter pointed out that it's not even like a Chinese looking dragon. It's like a very like Western interpretation of like the image of a dragon. So, of course, people managed to, like, twist that into, like, oh, this motherfucker couldn't even, like, do a Chinese dragon. But, you know, I'm sure it wasn't him, like, painting that. But still, no, like,
shit. Vincent Zhou didn't airbrush his own fucking costume.
But, like, it goes to, like, a level of dramaturgy where I'm like, if you're doing this, why is it not fully researched?
It is a little bit Game of Thrones. You're right. It's not a Chinese dragon. It's a little bit like white guy who owns his own dojo downtown. Oh, yes. But you know what? Vincent is Chinese American. Maybe that is deliberate. It's like East and West.
The dragon is Chinese American. That's inspired. I'm sorry, that's
so, the dragon is second generation.
As a questioning Vincent Zhou apologist, I am gonna take that and run with it.
I'm gonna buy my $100 Stars on Ice meet and greet pass so I can ask Vincent whether the dragon is a commentary on his Chinese American identity. I thought that he performed this quite well, and he brought that kind of understated Vincent drama that he does.
You know what, though? I've been struggling to find a way to describe this, because it's true for everyone. Everyone who is out there wants to win. There is something about the way he skates sometimes, not always, but like sometimes, you can tell that he really, really, really wants it. And it almost feels like a little bit too much. He feels like a person who's like right between a B and an A in class, and they keep like raising their hand to prove that they've read like the whole ass lesson, because like everyone has that urgency, like it's a part of it, and I would be mad if he didn't. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm like, there's a different way to do this.
I wonder if my perception of that too is being colored by the fact that off ice, the way he talks is like a guy who was like a little lost and then like read a lot of self-help books that were like geared towards businessmen and then just kind of quotes them instead of having a personality. Like
that's fully who he is.
A little bit who he is right
now.
But
I will say, if you look at like Instagram, that's also Mick Brazino.
No, Mick Brazino is like a live, laugh, love girl though.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, his is a little sunnier and softer, okay, and like,
that's fair. Yeah, it's very that. You're right. It's slightly different. Yeah, I wonder if it's a little bit of this, like, self-made businessman energy that I'm, like, responding
to.
Yeah,
it's the self-made man thing, and I'm like, you're a child. You're not a self-made man. You have coaches.
Yeah.
You're homeschooled by your mom. Like, you're not self-made if you're homeschooled by your mom.
He has this triple axel double toe, which he fucks up massively, but his save is inspired. It's one of those moments where it's like, is this a Euler? Did he trip? Is it what is happening? He's still jumping, so I'm okay with it. But it's just the quick thinking of that impresses me a lot.
I didn't notice that it was a mistake. I thought it was an Euler or a Euler or whatever.
It's like
they all look like trips, to be fair. Show me an Euler that doesn't look like they just tripped.
I can't. I'm never sure. It is listed as a triple XO double two.
I have a theory about this program that builds on our YA universe that we are building.
I am so excited. I'm listening.
In our last episode, we talked about how Vincent's short program is like the big love scene, and he's like the love interest to Brady's like Katniss Everdeen character.
Yep.
Okay. So in this program, it feels like it's a later book and he's getting his own subplot and like a little more of a fleshed out character. And he has to go and like learn about the old ways from the elders and like learn how to fight. So he's not just like cowering behind his gun sword girlfriend all the time. But while he's there, and this is where shit gets a little weird. I'm just going to warn you, buckle up.
I am sorry.
He still in this program does that like dramatic edge change spread eagle where he kind of ruffles his own hair. And I'm like, is this a callback? Do the elders also teach him to be a better lover?
No, I feel like, no, I can workshop this for you. The elders don't know. The elders are like elderly and they don't talk about this. It's
old
just
people know how to fuck.
I'm not being ageist. I'm just saying that those particular elders are like, they're like warriors and they don't talk about this and like this kind of stuff. But
oh, they're like the Kingsguard. They've like taken a
yeah, vow of they just do not. But because they bring this up and they're like, hey, maybe you should like consider this like vow of celibacy because like that's how you fight better. He has like this dramatic Rocky training scene where he's like sword fighting and stuff, and the words of the elders keep like echoing in his head, so he like leaves practice very dramatically and he goes back to his like little dorm room, which is like bare and it's just a mattress on the floor, and he goes to bed because he's exhausted, and then he has a flashback dream, and that's where we finally see the rest of that scene, which like faded to black last time.
Netta, that's so good. I want to watch that movie.
Right?
Instead of Worlds, we're just going to watch that movie. Sorry, we need to talk about figure skating. I'm like having the most fun writing this.
So he finishes his program and he has this moment. He has his like Yuzuru Hanyu wannabe like commune with the ice.
Oh, yeah.
But he pats the ice. And first of all, he's exhausted. And he says that in the kiss and cry. But he pats the ice in a way which literally looks like he's telling the ice, like, well done. Like, good job. We did that.
Again, was it the ice or was it an old blind dog?
Maybe there's just like dogs we're not seeing.
Ghost dogs. Hot take. There were ghost dogs in Anaheim.
It's because Mateo wasn't there.
God damn it.
Yeah, and then in the kiss and cry, he's just like talking about how tired he is, which is a mood.
But you know what he said? He goes, I'm really proud of myself. Like unprompted, which... And his coach was like, okay, good.
I feel that, though. Like, if you can't be proud of yourself, how in the hell are you going to expect someone else to be proud of you?
That is true. He was manspreading so hard in that kiss and cry. He has two female coaches, so it was very noticeable to me. I'm sure a lot of them do it. But just, like, I don't know, man. Like, close your legs a little bit. The program's over.
Well, you're untucking the kiss and cry. The judges and I will deliberate. That's literally what they do. But anyway, speaking of numbers, Vincent gets another season's best. This is so great. Like, everyone was doing so well. He gets 172.04 points for his free skate, which brings him to 272.22 overall, and brings him to the podium. In second place, we have Boyang Jin from China. Before we even go into this free skate, which I have a lot to say about, I wanted to point out that in the press conference after, he was the person who spoke about how the time change of the free skate like really affects his performance. Because the free skate used to be 4.5 minutes and now it's 4 minutes, which some people would argue that it's easier to skate for 4 minutes than it is to skate for 4.5 minutes because that's 30 seconds more of you working. However, like people like Boyang are in this camp of when you don't have those 30 extra seconds, you have to do all of your required elements so quickly. So he spoke about like how it's, you know, exhausting and very different and like taxing.
As Madonna said, we only got 4 minutes to save the world.
No hesitating.
It's like saying you only have to sprint for 4 minutes instead of 4.5. Well, that sounds better, but you have to cover the same distance. So it's actually much worse.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. So keeping that in mind, he skates to Able Conella, and it's a Spanish piece in a red and black costume.
Okay, I actually like this costume.
I'm not mad at it.
I actively like it. Also, I actively like this piece of music. I'm like so surprised at myself, but I think this costume is great. And I'm going to tell you why I think this costume is great.
Okay, I'm listening.
I think the shade of red is good. I will start there. The ombre of the red into the black keeps it from being like red shirt, black pants.
Okay, that's fair.
It is cohesive. I have always said that red and black is okay if you have a third accent color, and he does have some gold sparkles and he has his gold blades. So it's his really more like blades. Red, black, and gold. And finally, and this is my favorite part of this, is that if you look closely, the collar on this is a Mandarin collar, and then it has ruffles on top. And the dramaturgy of being like, I am a Chinese man skating to like a Spanish routine, it's like both heritages in one collar. And I don't know if that was deliberate, but I love it.
This is good dramaturgy, and I can buy into that. I will agree. It's not my least favorite as far as like Spanishy red and black goes. I enjoy this program as a standalone. I just wish it didn't have to compete with so many others that are in the very same vein. But it is a very good program. I don't enjoy it as much as his short. Like, I have a harder time connecting to this. And he's truly testing me because both of his program choices are things that I would not, in theory, like.
I actually thought he sold the shit out of this.
Oh yeah,
I thought that his sexy face and his like whole like he really is bringing a completely different character than he did in his short.
Yeah, yeah.
His short is like, yes, it's like Earnest Sexy Rock, but it's also very playful. It's very like, look at me, I'm getting away with something by doing this crazy rock routine, and like, oh my gosh, this routine, he was so man.
He is so like, man.
It was like, this is the guy that your girl tells you not to worry about. Like, it was very bad.
Yeah, he has this, I mean, all of his jumps are great, but on his quad lutz, he literally flies. He travels so far, and I don't know, it's because of, like, the way it's placed, I feel like, on the actual ice. It looks like he covers, like, half the rink.
A lot of clapping and slapping in this
one. A lot of clapping and slapping. I feel like it's... In a post-Javier Fernandez world, if you're not clapping and slapping in it, you should not be doing it.
Agreed. I think the bar has been set really high for clapping and slapping.
Yep.
I actually also really like this music. I love Spanish guitar, as we've seen with Shoma in his short program. I love this very, like, 70s, like, play tone, like, da-ya, da-da-da-ya, like the singing. I love it.
Do you have anything else to add about it?
Yeah, it's so hard to know what standard to hold Boyang to because he won 4 continents last year.
Yeah.
And then this season has been harder for him. So it's like, gosh, you know, we just don't know what to expect with him, but we just want the best.
Even though he places second, he like really defended that title, especially like given how his season has been going. I feel like he did a great job, which gets him 181.34 points. And gets him into a second place overall with 273.51. And so, man, we stand. In first place, we have Mr. Shoma Uno from Japan, who did it. He was, just in case you don't remember, he was not even on the podium for the short. And he came the fuck back. I barely took notes, honestly, like, rewatching him. I was distracted just watching him.
Yeah. I mean, he just, the GOEs on his jumps are pretty gosh darn huge. And, you know, I mean, the quad flip for Shoma is always kind of a double-edged sword, right? Because he was the first man to land one, I think, and at least in international competition. And so that's like his signature jump. But then sometimes it's not always consistent. But this time it was.
Oh, it was so good. He lands
in the quad toe.
He lands both of those because he like goes so hard and like there's so much momentum in the actual like flight of that jump. He always like lands them like really, really low, like he bends all the way down at that like wonderful knee bend that like not everyone has, and it's always like up until he skated away from the jump. I'm not sure if he's gonna hold it.
Yeah, he like turns it into a little scoot, you know. I love a good scoot from the boy shoes.
It's great.
I always think that the Moonlight Sonata, especially like the first movement, like the part that everybody knows and like plays in piano in middle school, or if you're better at piano than I was in elementary school, it's about like tension and release. Like that's like the whole thing about that piece of music, not just on like a music theory dick, but like that's what I think about is like tension and release. And like that's literally like Shoma is like the skater that I think skates with the best handle on that concept. building tension and then releasing it strategically, like through his choreography. And, you know, again, shout out to his coach, Mihoko Higuchi, who we were watching earlier a video of him skating when he was like 4 or 5 years old. And Mihoko like comes out and gives him a little hug after. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like she's been his coach his whole life.
She's seen things.
She's not aged at all. And second of all, like it's goddess. I get so emotional when I think about like the fact that she must know him so well and like be like a second mom or a big sister. I just think that's so sweet. And her choreography is stunning. She gets what he can do and really makes the most of it.
Yeah, it's one of those pieces where I never doubt where this choreo is going. And honestly, like, sometimes even with, like, classical pieces that I really like, and Moonlight Sonata being one of them, you know, when it's just, like, a piano piece, it's slightly easier for me to get distracted, and that's my personal problem. But with this particular program, I'm captivated, like, beginning to end. Also, he looks beautiful. We have not talked about his blouse, but we know I love that blouse so deeply.
We love this blouse. He has that long, like, dramatic, long, 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 long spread eagle that it goes right into a bestie squat. And it's just like, look at my thigh strength, world. And again, it seems like the judges agree with me that he has the best spread eagle in the game.
Oh, yeah. Out of current competing skaters, absolutely.
The way you say out of current competing skaters makes me feel like you have someone in mind who's better.
Brian Boitano for the rest of my life. And I say that as a Norser stan who still is mad about Calgary 88.
I just wanted you to say that. Like, I just set you up because I wanted you to get mad.
Consistently 24/7 mad about the 1988 Olympics, which were 5 years before I was born. But Brian Boitano has an undeniably beautiful spread eagle.
Oh, I wanted to say that this is actually one of my favorite examples of choreography highlighting a transition in the music, mm-hmm. because he launches into his triple axel, and the second he hits the ice, it launches into the fast part. It's like,
yes, it's so good. It's like, it feels like he initiates the music, which is so smart.
Yes. So he finishes.
He finishes and he looks so relieved at the very end.
He just falls flat on the ice on his face, just collapses, kind of falls asleep.
Because he's spinning and he's spinning and he's spinning and then he strikes his final pose. He holds it for like half a beat and then he's just on his knees.
And then he struggles off the ice and Mihoko has to like hold him up to get him to the kissing cry because he's so tired and injured.
God bless him. He stresses me out so often. But he gets, it's another season's best, which is wonderful, and he did not expect it. He gets 197.36 points for his free skate.
Which is not only a season's best, it's a world motherfucking record for free skate.
And he did that, like, injured.
And when he gets his score, he goes, "Wah!"
It's so precious. And that brings him up to 289.12 points overall. And that gives him the status of current reading four continents champion. How exciting. I honestly did not know if he was going to pull it off going into this competition because he was, you know, injured and we had heard like mixed things about practice and stuff. And it went well.
And the silver curse has been broken. This is his very first gold medal at an international competition, which seems insane to
me.
A major international competition. Because he's won Grand Prix events, but those don't count. This is like his first big giant gold medal. Yeah.
Okay. That's boys, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And now in the spirit of gender equality, we're going to talk about women's second. It's still funny.
The good news is we get to start with Mariah, the bunny mom herself.
Yeah, so Mariah Bell. Okay, so this is a thing that I feel like we didn't, like, explicitly say last time. But for her and Brady, this was, like, they were skating to a home audience. And especially Mariah, like, trains in California. So it was, like, very much, you know, while other people are from, like, the other end of the world, they were, like, home, basically. There's someone in the audience who screams out, "Come on, Mariah," as she's skating on.
Again, I'm not convinced it wasn't you from Bulgaria.
She falls in her triple loop. Not great. But she, like, gets right back up and she keeps going and her combo spins are always so beautiful.
Like, she just extends her arms and legs all the way out. It doesn't feel... It's, like, whatever the opposite of when I describe some people's arms and legs as, like, flappy. Like, she's the opposite of flappy for me.
I've been trying to figure out how to say that because it's not just about being, like, expressive. she, it's just like her face always looks like she's having so much fun performing for this audience at this particular event, which I feel like is a very like particular skill, because anyone can go out and be like, I've been told to smile or like to like express this particular emotion. And she just looks like she's enjoying showing you what she can do.
I think that's just called like star quality, that like ineffable like it factor. X factor. I don't know. It's the X factor.
I enjoy that. Also, it makes it easier to forgive when something doesn't go perfectly right. Like, she has the double Lutz, which doesn't go well, and she like kind of two-foots it, and I don't know exactly what happens, but she like exits out of it with like a little tree turn, and she's like just smiling. She's like, well, this has happened and we're gonna move on, and that makes me happy.
And like, I really got a full story from this piece, which sometimes I don't always get a story from like instrumentals, because that aren't from like a very iconic opera or something like that. And that makes me feel like maybe the skater doesn't have a story in their head. But with her, and maybe it's because the piece is called Experience, but like I got a story of somebody who like overcame something, or who like gained experience and got more confidence.
Going into it, I'm always like, I don't connect to this piece as much as I connect to her short, because her short is so iconic and it's such a clear story. But then watching it this time around, I was like, actually, I can totally see what it's supposed to be. And like,
yeah, that was my exact
why
reaction.
It's being told. And as a theater person, all I look for is, why are you telling me this story? Why should I care?
Maybe it is something personal to her. And so performing it sort of, it's not that she's from LA, but like she does train there and that is her home now.
I don't know, but it really worked. But
she's got a really pretty spiral.
She does. Her spirals are just like so, it's what you were saying. It's so extended, and like every single line is just like finished, and it feels like she's being carried, because sometimes a spiral can look dangerous if someone, you know, has their leg really far up and like everything, but it looks like they're about to like keel over their ectopic, because that's a thing that can very much happen. My cheekbone still hurts.
I don't understand why she keeps getting these low PCS scores, because we talk so much about her beautiful lines, and I'm like, isn't that where you would praise those? Like, just, what is wrong with her skating? Does she have shallow edges? Is she like, I don't understand what's wrong with it that I'm not seeing.
She doesn't. And like, if anyone can tell me, I mean, please do, but also like, I'll be mad at you. So if you want to risk your friendship with me, tell me. But honestly, like and obviously like I'm not a trained professional at all, but like, I cannot tell you what this panel of judges is seeing, especially given like some of the other scores for like other people. I don't know.
It's probably just a matter of taste, which,
I'm sure.
I can't make the judges stop having shitty taste.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those things that we have to keep like remembering in figure skating, is that there's no like finish line. You can't like look at a photo finish and be like, oh, this is who was first. Okay, so for her free skate, Mariah gets 124.92 points, which brings her to 193.94 overall and sixth place.
Speaking of Brady Tennell, next up we have Brady Tennell.
Beautiful, we're so good at podcasting. But we have Brady, and spoiler alert, we have another Romeo and Juliet. This time it's Juliet. It's Romeo and Juliet 2, this time it's Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet 2, Juliet's turn.
My first note just says, I wish she'd bent her elbows more.
It's a little hyperextended.
Just a little hyperextended. And because she's like, and it's not something that like I would clock if the rest of her skating was like worse. It's because she's like technically very good, and I'm like looking for stuff to nitpick, and it bothers me. But this dress, not only is it burgundy and it matches her eyeliner, the stonework is so beautiful. Like, in the beginning, before she starts moving, it's kind of like what I talked about with Boyang last time. It's, like, very elaborate, very colorful stonework. So even though, like, overall it's, like, a very monochrome look, it's, like, burgundy, there's still, like, so much color that's, like, reflecting light, and it's really, really pretty.
It's really, really one of my favorite costumes of
the season.
It's
so opulent. And beautiful, and she like makes it work. Also, like, her hair is like, she always does like the same kind of braided bump for it, and there is like a hair piece, It's very, like, royal, which is what we want from this.
Oh, she under-rotated a fair amount of jumps on this day. It just, like, wasn't her best performance jump-wise.
Yeah, I feel like there was, like, a little bit of tension that, like, got in her way. Because she is, like, she's, like, Jun Hwan in that she does Romeo and Juliet, and also that she's, like, skinny, but she's, like, taller for a skater. And I don't always, like, with someone with her physicality, it's not a good or a bad thing. I don't always expect, like, the amount of force she has. And she skates with, like, power, which is unexpected sometimes and, like, really, really fun when she does go into those jumps or, like, you know, when she's, like, pushing through, like, for one of the step or choreo sequences. It's just, like, a good testament to her skill.
And, like, her commitment to this performance is really lovely, but for my money, I would like to see a little more variety because we have the bar is really high because we've seen Jun Hwan do his Romeo and Juliet where we really get a range and we get a story. Yeah. And this program is a lot about Juliet's torment and her sorrow, but there's no romance. And especially during the part that's like the love theme from the Zeffirelli version and it's like her step sequences to that. I'm like, I would love to see that be a moment where she's like soft and romantic because Juliet is soft and romantic sometimes. That's like her whole deal, man.
But it's so lyrical, like the way it's actually placed to music. And then my favorite part of this program is when we go into Over Rono. It is high stakes drama. And she has that that spiral and then she has like her flying camel combo spin, which just keeps going. She's just like much like Mariah. She has this combo spin which just does not end. She just like keeps comboing and spinning.
Music combo. I love that she ends with a full dagger in her chest.
And it gets her to fifth place with 128.16 points for her free and an overall of 202.07. And next, we have another Benoit Rochot masterpiece by Miss Kaori Sakamoto.
Yes, or as the announcer called her this time, Kaori, which is not correct, but less
slightly
effective.
Better. Before we even get into her skating, I want to say, and this is going to go across the board for all of Team Japan in this free skate, they are so fucking good at wearing, like, a very muted, like, pastel or, like, lighter color, something ensemble, and then just a bold statement lip. It is so great.
It was beautiful. Yeah, and I love this costume, too. I love that it's black and white and it's a piano. Like, that's cute for me.
Yeah.
I've never seen this movie, but I assume, based on Kaori Sakamoto's free skate, that it's about a seagull who learns how to play the piano.
Yeah, it's a very inspiring real-life story about a very talented bird.
It's like off-brand Happy Feet, where, like, it's a different type of bird and a different unlikely but entertaining skill. Also, I love that she starts on a subtle air piano. I think air piano is fun. Air guitar sucks, but air piano is fun.
Yeah, this is actually earlier when I was saying about pieces of choreography that feel like this is the only possible way it could possibly happen. This is one of those. She's like a bird and she only flies away, you know?
She doesn't know where her home is.
Thank you. Thank you for this. Thank you for entertaining this bit. It was either that or like a Chekhov joke. I don't have a lot to say about this program, just because it's one of those ones that I always just, like, sit back and really enjoy. It has a soundscape in the middle, which is inspired. We get, like, the actual seagulls. I don't know. It, like, takes me somewhere.
It's really a beautifully done program. There's so much about it that is right. And yet, it's like she has an edge call on her triple lutz, and she pops her axel. And if she had not popped that axel, like, she could have gotten a silver medal. Like, literally so close. The spread between her and third place and second place is all within, like, a point of each other. And she lost, like, at least, what, like, 3+ points on her popped axel.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's like, it literally, you can point it down to one mistake. I think it just really devastated her, which sucks because it was beautiful. I mean, her spirals are like, she just does like 3 different kinds in a row.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, I can do it this way. I can do it that way. I can do it in the front. I can do it in the back. I'm cutting all of that because now I hear what I sound like.
Yeah, no, but I agree. She seemed devastated at the end. And that was so hard to watch because we love her. And
she's one of the skaters who really wears her heart on her sleeve the most. Like, the second she finishes, she either is like, yeah, yes, or like full on sobbing into her hands before she's off the ice.
Yeah. I just want to tell you that you're doing fine. Like, you just did this and it was beautiful. And you're being so hard on yourself for like half a point that may be lacking. And I understand, you know, the meaning between, like, the difference between third and fourth place. And it's a massive one in this case, but she did so well. But score-wise, she does get 133.43, which brings her to 206.79 overall in fourth place. But now that we're talking about all of this movement, we have the biggest comeback of this event in third place. Because Mai was not even in the top six in the free, right? In the short, right?
No, Mai Mihara was like seventh eighth. Or eighth.
And then she has the comeback of all comebacks. It's just riveting to watch because she's just there to prove that what happened yesterday was a one-time thing and she knows what she's doing. And what she does is she skates out in her dress, which looks like wings.
It does. It looks like wings and the skirt twirls just right. And it's like periwinkle and it has a million bajillion rainbow crystals on it. It's like the sparkliest thing I've ever seen. It's like, this is the dress that I, as a little girl, would have like killed a man with my bare hands to get.
I just imagine you're at like 4 years old, like fully stabbing a guy.
I mean, yeah, it's a great dress.
It's a beautiful dress. It's so beautiful.
And she has feathers in her hair. She's an angel.
Yeah. But I do not know how I feel about this music. It's borderline.
I like it.
It's borderline Charlotte Church for me. I feel like it's telling me how I'm supposed to feel.
Yeah, I almost don't care because my skating is so genuinely joyful that I'm like, yeah, the music should be like cheesy and joyful because anything else would not be as joyful as Mai. So it's like, it's got to match that energy. And I think it's pretty. It reminds me of like a beautiful crystal lake atop a mountain. And then Mai descends as like the spirit of water and wholesome joy energy. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I buy that.
I don't know if I think she's as graceful as the other Japanese girls, but this program capitalizes on what she does well, which is a very bouncy, happy energy.
Yeah, truly fights her way up this ranking just with the sheer spirit of like joy and good skating. And I love that.
I actually also, this step sequence, the one that's toward the end to the choir music, mm-hmm. I think is one of my favorite step sequences.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
This season. It's so pretty and it makes really good use of levels.
It's so easy to make a theater person excited. You just go very high and then you go very, very low and we're like, oh my god, it's theater!
She gets her season's best.
Yet another season's best at Four Continents. There are so many of them and that's honestly so exciting because it speaks to like everyone having worked hard continuously during the season to like one up themselves. So she gets 141.97 points and 207.46 for her overall score.
She gets higher PCS than Kaori, which I don't know if I agree with that, but
I don't know. This particular panel of judges, and I have questions about a lot of their choices, but like I said, it's human beings with opinions. And I can't argue with that. Elizabeth Tursunbaeva, she skates.
Tursunbaeva, I hardly know her. That doesn't work.
It doesn't work at all. It does not work.
I like red and purple together.
I can't beat around the bush. This is not my favorite program. I don't find it exciting or interesting or like have anything to say about it.
Yeah, for me, okay, the big red letter thing from this routine is that she is the first woman in international competition to fully rotate a quad sal.
It is.
She doesn't land it. She falls right on her behind, but it is fully rotated and she gets the full, I mean, that's notable.
It is. She is also the first woman from Kazakhstan to podium at Four Continents, right?
Yeah, and she's only the second after Dennis Ten, RIP.
Pour one out.
Pour one out for Dennis. I'm happy that Kazakhstan got, you know, something nice happened for them in the world of skating.
Yeah. And also she skates, you know, her gala is like a tribute to him. It's like a whole thing. And it's very touching. And it's good to know that like Kazakhstan figure skating still has, you know, a solid representative in the world and like a very promising one at that. So that's great. I appreciate her for like what she stands for, but I don't like this program.
I wrote, wow, great, another personality-less tango.
Yeah, I wrote down, this is a deeply unexciting choice. Because, like, the thing is, I really want to care for what she gives. Like, I've watched her gala, and it's really, really touching and emotional. And I'm not saying that it all has to be like that, because that's emotionally taxing in a way that might not be healthy. I just wish I could see something else that's not a tango in red.
Okay, Daniil did this choreography, and it's dumb. It's bad choreography. It's not good. And it's just bland and uninspired. I really tried to watch her with, like, a really positive lens of, like, what do I like about her skating? What can I say about her that I like? You know, she doesn't have, like, that, like, nice tension that Shoma has or the nice flakes midlines that Mariah has. But she does have a lot of speed because she's tiny and aerodynamic.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the part where I really like watching her is when she's doing things, like, really fast because, like, only she can do that. And I'm like, if I was going to choreograph for her, I would
just something, like, hardcore and, like, fast, right?
Yeah, so high energy, so fast. And I immediately thought that it would be fun to see her skate to, like, the Sonic the Hedgehog music. Gotta go fast. And it doesn't make happy. She's so cute when she smiles.
Yeah, what you said, like, I feel like I'm being robbed of, like, an experience that could be really riveting.
Yeah, we gotta get her to play to her strengths and not just try to do what everyone else is doing, but worse.
The only other note I have is basically what we touched upon with the Quad Sal is that this is one of those examples of, like, kind of what we discussed with Jason of, like, the way we reward risk. And, you know, now she will forever be on record as the first woman to fully rotate it. And the sport keeps pushing expectations and limitations, which is just something to think about. So on that note, she gets 139.37 for her free skate and an overall of 207.46 for her overall performance, which gets her silver, which is, like we said, a first for Kazakhstan and the ladies. And it's super exciting. Like,
especially because you kind of expect bronze to be a wild card, but for silver to be a wild card, it's like, what?
It's honestly, like, one of those things that, like, keeps me coming back to, like, every single competition. It's just you don't know what's gonna happen. Yeah, that's exciting. Hey, speaking of exciting, in first place, and it's not even a spoiler, she was so far ahead of everyone by the end of this, with, like, 14 points ahead of everyone else. We have Rika Kihira, who is just, I love this program.
I do too. It's the beautiful storm. I feel like I'm witnessing somebody conjuring a storm, like, and that's so fucking cool.
I always appreciate her, like, little meditation moment with her coach right before she skates off.
Yeah, I always feel like she's in, like, a different and better YA franchise than the one that Brady and Vincent are in. This is, like, the better one.
This is, like, the one that, like, people read first and they're like, the other one is just a ripoff. And they're correct.
Yeah.
Hers is more, like, Percy Jackson-esque. Like, there is more, like, actual, like, gods and goddesses, while the other one is more like just mean people with good weapons.
See, I also almost wanted to slot Rika into my, like, Team Japan mythology of, like, she's like the little thunder goddess and Mai, like, is on top of a mountain being like, I'm a peaceful lake queen.
And everyone's sent to Earth just to make sure that Choma doesn't blow things up.
Absolutely. I'm gonna do a whole pantheon of Team Japan.
That's the Team Japan inspired. Yeah, that's, yep, just cancel the podcast. I feel like we're done here.
Now, okay, here's the thing.
Yes.
The crazy part here is that she actually doesn't even perform this totally flawlessly because, well, I don't know what she planned on doing. Maybe this was according to plan. Because in her layout for this free, she does her triple axel and then she does, it's a triple axel, triple toe, but in this particular performance of it, she did double axel, triple toe. And I think it was planned, but it's like she didn't even need the second triple axel. She still won far and away.
Yeah, she has the triple lutz, double toe, which is so great. It's one of those combination jumps where it just feels like she never touches the ground. So even without the triple axel, I mean, it's a great place to be if you're leading and then the only thing you're kind of missing is a combo with a jump that no one else has.
Like, yeah, right.
You know, that's like a great problem to be having. She just could not be caught in this. Also, there is another soundscape moment in this. There is a lot of soundscaping in the ladies free. And I really enjoy that. She has, like, her storm.
Team Japan ladies all went in on like a Calm app subscription and they just kind of like pulled the noises and like.
Next, we're gonna have like someone with like a nice like crackling fire. It's like.
And then just like someone comes in with just white noise. Now, I love the ending of this. She like does like this extended like ridiculous like knee slide where she's like, I don't know if she's not really hydroblading. She's just kind of like knee sliding all over the place. And then I don't know.
It's the
just,
Stefan like, Lumbia LTM.
It is. It literally is. It's like drunk, sloppy Stefan and Don't Stop the Music, but in an epic way somehow.
No, it's really beautiful. And then we'll talk about this in depth in a second in Plushie Corner, but she collects every single toy on this ice.
Every plushie. Like, she, it's just a sheer volume.
We'll get to that because I need to, like, really talk about them. But before that, I need to give you some numbers because they make me happy. She gets 153.14 points for her free skate. And that brings her to 221.99 points overall. And that is about 15 points above Elizabeth.
It's wild. And as of now, she is still undefeated in international competition because she competed at the Challenge Cup in The Hague. Is that how you say that? In the Netherlands? The Hague? And she didn't even really do that well. It was kind of like the worst we've seen her in a while. And
she still won by like a bunch. So we're all kind of looking at her for Worlds because she could have the perfect season. And I'm not going to jinx it just yet. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Okay, but that concludes our actual coverage of the top six in ladies and men in the Four Continents Figure Skating Championship 2019. People won and some other people didn't, and we were all proud of all of them. And now we're going to talk about stuff that's equally as important, such as plushies. Okay, so Four Continents, like we said last time, was super lit in terms of plushies, and we've already kind of mentioned some of them. I just want to point out a few more, such as Brady's. We think it's a dinosaur. It's bright green, and it's ribbed.
It looks like Littlefoot.
Yeah, it's very cute. And it's not even like one of the big ones. It's just like, texturally, it looks great.
I don't like that you keep saying things like ribbed and textured to describe it. You're making it sound like a condom.
No, it's a plushie. It's a soft plushie. It looks like a corduroy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just gonna stop. It's great. I enjoyed it.
Great.
Who else?
We said Junwan, as always, kind of just skates by the boards with his arms wide open and will receive anything you give to him. I tried to keep track of what he got, and I was able to write purple teddy bear, blue mouse, a lot of flowers, a big sloth thing, ? And as we said, he did almost trip on an owl, but the purple teddy bear really was the pièce de résistance. He was hugging that guy pretty hard.
That teddy bear is my actual favorite color ever, so I really enjoyed that. I felt like spiritually connected. Very problematically, Vincent has probably the best plushie out of this entire
I think it is the best plushie. Like, no question, he has a red narwhal, and he, like, makes it dance, and it's so...
It's very precious.
That's the winner for quality, but for quantity, it does have to go to Rika.
Oh, yeah, and she also gets one of those massive teddy bears that's usually, like, five flower girls have to drag it off. She, like, picks up one of them and just carries it out by herself.
She got some kind of pink cow monster. She got a cheetah. She got a Shiba dog. And she got a pink sparkly dinosaur. And the thing about her coach that's great is that they always spend their entire time in the Kiss and Cry, like, meticulously organizing them in the most aesthetic way possible. And, like, the coach also did, like, a drum roll on the belly of the cheetah, which was very cute.
Yeah. Also, she, like, if you follow her on Instagram, which you should, her Instagram is gold, she posted, like, a picture of all of her plushies, like, arranged. It's great.
Yeah, we'll talk about Challenge Cup in a second, but after Challenge Cup, her coach and her spent the entire deliberation period arranging like 20 bunnies of all different sizes, from like biggest to smallest, into like this beautiful family tableau. It was like, they really have fun with it. They genuinely enjoy it.
Great.
Like, They love plushies as much as we do.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, do you want to just transition into talking a little bit about, like, other stuff that happened this week? Because there was a bunch.
Yeah, so the Challenge Cup was a competition that happened in The Hague in the Netherlands. And Rika competed, and she won. But as we said, she didn't win by as much as she normally would. And in second place was Star Andrews.
Which was so great.
Which is, again, it's her first international medal, which is so cool for her. And she also, especially because she didn't get picked for Worlds. And so I think that this was nice that she was able to get something in this season. And she went back to her last year free skate, which is a mashup of Whitney Houston and Star Andrews covering Whitney Houston.
Which is
and
incredible.
She has a good voice.
Yeah.
And then bronze was Wakaba Higuchi, who we love and hasn't gotten to compete that much because she's been hurt. And she also went back to her last season skate, which is the James Bond, which is one of the fucking coolest programs.
It is so great. I was was running late for skate practice and I had to call a taxi just because I could not walk away because she was skating that and I had to watch it.
I love that program. So good for them. Good for them.
Yeah. But yeah, that also happened. There was also
the Hotel Cup in Tallinn. Yeah, so it's in Tallinn, Estonia, and it's the Hotels Cup. Makes me feel like a bunch of skaters just showed up to a hotel and like decided to have an impromptu little thing.
They like found a rank and they were like, "Well, here's a rank. We're just going to skate around and we're going to give out some medals." Which is what it should have felt like, but Misha Kanata just had like a time. He won with a 6-point deduction in his free skate.
Which is like such a flex.
I feel so bad for the rest of everyone who was there. But yeah, this is where we're at this point of the season. There is a bunch of like smaller events that have happened, which are like leading up to Worlds. But in the meantime, do you want to talk about social media? What has been happening with social media this week?
How about Benoit Richaud in Japan with Kaori Sakamoto, and she did the 10 axel challenge where she just literally does 10 double axels
in a row.
No stopping. It's fucking insane. And then she dabs at the end.
Yeah, she dabs at the end, which is great. But Benoit's like trying to make it a thing. I feel like one or two people so far have like responded with videos of their own. So if any of our listeners have a double axel or a single axel or anything, you can record them and show them to Benoit and he'll be very proud of you. What else? People have started practicing for Stars on Ice. Ashley Wagner has been posting her progress for her new program, which sounds super fun because it's too groove is in the heart.
I can't wait. I have my tickets to see Stars on Ice in April, and I'm losing my shit over it. I'm going to see, because Nathan Chen's going to some of the cities and Jason Brown's going to the other cities. I'm going to a Nathan show, and I'm extremely excited.
I am so excited for you to like tell me all about that. We're gonna have to have like a whole like recap.
Honestly, like if we did a Kickstarter and made $100, I would buy a meet and greet pass and go interview skaters, but like I'm not paying that much for just myself.
So if anyone has $100 they want to spend on Megan asking Vincent Joe about his dragon opinions, she'll give you her Venmo when we do social media. In the meantime, what else is happening? Speaking of things on ice, they announced the Fantasy on Ice cast for 2019.
It's lit.
It is so lit. Like, I wish I was a person in Japan. Most of the time, but especially for this. Virtue and More are doing it, which everyone's, like, super excited about on Twitter. No one's sure if they're still doing the Moulin Rouge. People are like, are they still going to do that? Also, Johnny Weir and Stefan Lombiel are doing it, which is what I care about. Who else is doing it? I don't have the list in front of me, actually, so I can't. Jeffrey Butto is doing it. Who else? I don't remember. But it came out yesterday, and it was exciting as well.
And speaking of Japan, Daisuke Takahashi released a super cool photo shoot of himself for Japanese Vogue, I believe. And he's wearing like winged eyeliner and like traditional garments. And he looks so fucking beautiful.
It is stunning. It's so great. High fashion is incredible. Yeah, it's
what
great.
A beautiful man.
He's wonderful. We stand.
We didn't talk about the gala, I just realized.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a lot of things to say about the gala. We kind of mentioned Elizabeth does her Dennis Tan tribute, which is beautiful. The only thing I need to talk about is Keegan missing. So here's the thing. To be honest, I had not seen this gala until it was brought to my attention yesterday.
Same.
For any of you who have not seen Keegan Messing's exhibition skate this year, he skates to Tarzan in just a leopard print, like, wrap skirt.
And I need to be clear on this because it's not like a Plushenko sex bomb situation where he's wearing any sort of, like, fake muscle chest a la, like, Arrested Development style. He's just fully shirtless, and I think he is wearing tights, but he has a little leopard sarong.
He's wearing, like, dance tights and, like, black underwear and leopard print sarong.
And skates, which it makes it so vulgar in a way that it wouldn't have been otherwise. It's like, see a guy in just, like, underwear and, like, sneakers.
Yeah, that's all we have to say, I think, about the gala. Except, do you want to talk about Rika? Just at the banquet?
Yeah, so some of you may have been very, very invested in the Oscars red carpet, but over here at the Iced Tea Podcast, all we care about is gala fashion.
I mean, I will say Billy Porter is an icon, just let it be known, but banquet fashion is so much more important.
It truly is. I would like to say that Rika Kihira comes through once again, providing all of that good, good banquet content. She had so many selfies with everybody and everything. Of course, a Zamboni, the wait staff at the bar. She comes through. She's wearing this adorable, like, white dress with, like, pink and red things on it, and Jason Brown wore a pink shirt, and they have a picture together, and it looks like they're going to, like, a Valentine's Day dance together. It's so cute.
Banquet pictures always look like everyone's at, like, a show choir competition, you know what I mean?
But also it reminds me of that picture of everybody at the X-Men premiere where it's like literally everyone here is just for a different party.
Yep. It's very that.
Like, my Mihara is wearing, like, I actually really liked this outfit, but it's, like, black and has, like, mesh sleeves. And so she looked like she was going to, like, a goth rave. And then you get Jeonwon Cha, who is, as always, feeling his K-pop fantasy. He's got, like, his big chunky, like, hip-hop necklace and cool hat. And my number one favorite was Fashion King Boyoung Jin, who was in a full navy blue velour Louis Vuitton tracksuit. It was like he saw Shoma's short program and was like, we're gonna make this ready to wear.
The opulence. It's inspired. It's very, like, Jeffree Star on Ice. I'm here for it.
Jeffree Star's on Ice. Tim Coletto is dressed as, he's wearing, like, a full Hawaiian shirt. And, like, Misato Komatsubara is wearing, like, a prom dress. And it's like, the two of them did not coordinate at all. Shoma wore, like, a very beautiful, like, burnt orange tie, which was, I thought, pretty bold. I mean,
yeah, that's a statement.
Kazuki and Keiji both look pretty tame compared
to... But they all look great.
They sure do.
Do we have anything else in social media?
I didn't know that Romain Ponsard had a tattoo that says "Believe in your dreams."
See, I knew that he has a tattoo. I didn't know that's what it said. I find that corny as hell, but it's him. So he's forgiven.
So I think every guy on Team Raph is a live, laugh, love, apparently. Like, yeah. Nathan's going to come back from Yale with a tattoo that says, like, Wanderlust XO or something. So tune in next week. We're going to do something a little different. And instead of covering an event, we're going to look back at the season, look back at maybe some past seasons, and try to put together some semblance of a primer / predictions for the World Figure Skating Championships 2019.
And we're doing juniors as well, because Junior Worlds is the week after that, so we can, like, really ease into the Worlds period. Join us for that next week. And in the meantime, where can they find you?
They can find me on the interwebs at MeganKelleher3 on Twitter and Instagram. Where can they find you?
They can find me at Neda Marie, that's N-E-D-A Marie, like Marie Kondo, on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find both of us and more info and stuff about this podcast on iceteapod.com or at iceteapod on Twitter and Instagram, where Megan is very good at posting compelling memes about this podcast. So join us there as well. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, or you just want to make us happy, you can head over to Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars. It would genuinely make my week. And also, if I see that you've done it, I'm going to slide into your DMs and send you a picture of Michal Brazino. Thank you so much for tuning in. We will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.